I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
He's all right.
All right. Yeah, there it is. It's a download. Touche. Monday nights here on 720 WGN. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy. Dave Lundy out tonight.
Where's Lundy?
Kevin Lampe in his stead. Kevin, a strategist in town. Good to see you, buddy.
It's good to be seen.
All right. So let's get right to it, shall we?
Hi, Kevin.
Good evening, Christopher.
Good to be with
you. Here we go. It's already like a stare down.
It is.
Kevin,
no,
Kevin,
it's not.
Kevin took Chris's seat.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and I think the most difficult part was the weigh in before. It got a little out of hand. Yeah. Our managers kind of mixed it up. And
I didn't think it was appropriate for you guys to get down to your skivvies, but that's politics.
My problem was the double cheese. The double cheese.
All right, let's talk about the weekend. Terrible terrorist attacks in London. The political response to this saw President Trump go to Twitter and talk about that we need more his travel ban, the original, not the watered down. What does this mean? I mean, you've seen a lot of people come out, everyone from international critics saying, you know, this is not the time or place to be talking about that stuff. What does it mean that Donald Trump sort of doubled down on the travel ban in the wake of the terrorist attack?
Well, I was a little more concerned about the fact that he was responding to or scoring points on the mayor of London, who is not somebody I terribly admire. I think he's misguided and, you know, typically in the statist fashion. But I think the time for that kind of political point scoring is not when, you know, six or seven, it turned out to be, and maybe, who, God forbid, might be more people had just lost their lives. As for the travel ban, the truth is, I think, you know, we now have a situation in which the Fourth Circuit has said that the text of the executive order, were it from President Kevin Lampe, could be legal.
Because it'd be eloquently written.
No. I'm saying
and legally sound.
The exact same text. The point here is they have gone outside of the text of the document
to say that
to look at the press releases and the statements on the stump,
and
they're using that to trump, no pun intended, the actual four corners of the document. And that's not law, and it's irrecognizable as law, and that's why it's the Fourth Circuit, and probably the Ninth Circuit for similar reason, will be overturned, and the Trump travel ban number two is going to get...
Yeah, but the argument has been, and Kevin, you can articulate it better than I, is that there shows to be a bias from President Trump on the campaign trail, so that you can't, do you hold that into account when you're talking about whether or not an executive order is actually, I guess, it, well, I don't know what they were saying, that it's an illegal ban on Muslims.
He keeps saying it's a travel ban. I mean, the problem is Trump needs to stop being a bully and be a president.
Yeah.
And even, you know, and he should, you know, if he wants to protect his executive orders, they already told you once, don't call it a travel ban. Shut up about it. But he just can't help himself. And, you know, it's like, you know, there are no, where are the adults? We heard this during the Clinton administration. Gosh, loved Britain. Where are the adults? There are more adults in the Clinton administration in the early days than are running around the White House right now.
I disagree about the first 6 months. But I will say this. You can't say it's law when a Donald Trump text is illegal and a Kevin Lampe version of the exact same text would be legal because of the sensitivities that my friend Kevin just expressed. Right. That's not law, okay? And it's going to go away, and he's going to get the second version. And why he's out today talking about the first version is beyond me.
And that's the problem. He can't comprehend what's going on. He doesn't understand what a president needs to say in situations. It's downright embarrassing. As I talk to friends around the world, they're like, you've given up the mantle. You're no longer the leader of the free world. That is done. We don't know what's going to happen. We are concerned. My friends in Sweden are concerned that the rhetoric has heated up, that, you know, that they're worried about the Russian subs that have been off their coast. They're worried about an attack from Russia over NATO. And NATO, you know, I never been a hawk in my life. But I'm the biggest NATO hawk in the world right now. And I find that scary. because I don't think it's my role, you know, is my participation
we,
in society
is to, hawkism.
Is to defend NATO. But now I'm like, this is vital. You know, NATO is what's held the world together.
Let me ask you this, though. And Chris, you can weigh in as well. I mean,
you
heard some people today say this is what President Trump got elected on, the idea that he wasn't going to be PC, he wasn't going to dance around the issue. He wants the security, he wants the bad guys to be out of the country. He points to a situation that,
he got elected in large part because of considerations like that, and also because of, say, vowing to repeal or vowing to walk away from the Paris Accords, which he did last week, and caused a liberal meltdown unlike anything we've seen. You know,
melted down over other things than
But this was pretty much, I mean, when you go through those network clips and you see everybody saying dark speech about the future of the, you know, all this kind of thing. And I think Trump is, generally speaking, delivering on what he promised. Now, but I've said many of the things that Kevin is saying 1,000 times, and we're not going to repeat them here tonight. He doesn't do things conventionally. He is unconventional. That's part of the reason he defeated Hillary Clinton.
But he's not being the president. He, you know, it's like getting the role in a TV show and deciding to play it completely different than what you were hired to do. He should know that. He's been a leader on a reality show before.
It's like the second guy to play Darren on Bewitched. Nobody remembers that guy. But actually, it's kind of opposite.
The Dick York, Dick Sargent. An argument I want to have with Roebling.
Yeah.
Sargent versus York.
Right. Well, I think it was Sargent I really liked, the first one. You know, he was really good.
The Paris Accords is a good place to pick up.
No, that was York.
We weren't on last week, but it happened in the middle of the week. You know, I'm intrigued on what you think of it, Chris. I mean,
great.
You think it's a great move?
One of the great steps ever. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic, desperately needed, and it's going to start a new conversation.
Isn't it a non-binding agreement?
Exactly.
So why make a statement against, because obviously...
Because we've got judges, just like these guys down at the Fourth Circuit who think that they can look at a press release instead of an executive order and opine on the nature of the law, okay? Here, you are talking about Barack Obama and John Kerry working years and years and years to come up with this nothing burger document, which really harms the United States. It's a vehicle for Obama to give money to the United Nations, which he did under the terms of this twice, total of $1 billion, never had an appropriation. Nobody in the Republican Party said a thing about it. Nobody in the liberal media said a thing about it. It's absolutely outrageous. And what Trump did is fantastic because you got judges out there who, before you know it someday, are going to cite this thing as valid law. And even Obama knew it wasn't valid law because Obama was afraid. Obama didn't take it to the Senate to be ratified.
And these are non-binding. It's not a treaty. And these are the ways that we move forward on issues that are important. We have an opportunity in this country to alter alternative energy can be the next infrastructure victory this country has.
Unless you're a bald eagle.
Let me finish this. I respected you, Chris, and your Georgetown attitude. But we have, in the Paris Accord, we have an opportunity to start moving ahead on something that is desperately needed in the world. And these are the steps that it takes to bring people together. And the give and take has to be. But you know, Trump comes into these things and he makes these promises that he knows that he keeps them so simple that he can keep them. It's like, I'm going to be the best baseball player in the world because I'm going to hit singles. And look at me, I led the lead in singles, but I hit no home runs, and I scored no runs, and I never was batted in, and never stole the base. But you know what? I hit a lot of singles, and I promised I was going to hit a lot of singles.
I think this is a grand slam home run. I think this was absolutely great because I'll tell you why. You have got to break the international so-called global warming bureaucracy. You have got to break it into a billion tiny bits because otherwise it is putting
because the heat of the sun is going to do that for us anyways.
No, I mean, Mount Etna just spewed out more CO2 in the last, 5 days or something than all of humankind has in all of our history.
But
it's
that sounds like a
billion dollars.
Are you making an argument that are you denying climate change in this
no,
regard?
No, I'm not denying climate change. I'm saying that the entire climate change policy argument, okay? Now, I would say 99.9% of the policy argument of climate change is based on the results of a variety of different mathematical models, all of which were put together by people who believe in climate change, and all of which weighted things.
It's like every single one I know because I know all their names and their addresses. I love this argument from conservatives. All of them, every single last one of them, they all did it. Every last one. No, not every last one.
Okay.
But this BS
maybe
rhetoric that
didn't.
You're using. I just forgot I was on a satellite yesterday.
Hold on. Let's take a break. You guys are getting too heated up. I got to hit the bell. Get the high fives in. Kevin Lampe, Chris Robley, Touche here on the download. We'll come back in just a second. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay. I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche. We're doing Touche here Monday night. Kevin Lampe in for Dave Lundy. Chris Roebling. We'll continue our conversation. We're talking politics. Before we move on to we're going to do a quick here.
I agree with you.
The idea that they're the texter just said the same thing.
Yeah.
So on Paris, on climate change, what's the alternative? Nothing? What's the alternative if we're not in a Paris Accord?
I don't think that we should do nothing. And I've said elsewhere, Trump needs to build up an argument for his side, however he views this thing. The reason you take the global warming issue seriously is not because of all of these failed models I was just talking about, but because of the potential consequences.
Right.
But like Bjorn Lomborg, the professor, the Danish economist, you assess those risks relative to both the time between now and then and what else we can be doing with our money now, and what appropriate steps we should be taking rather than draconian, drastic things. Now, that's a big canvas, and Trump ought to be filling that in. And he wasn't, and he hasn't, and I don't know if he's going to.
I'm not sure how draconian or drastic a non-binding Paris Accord is, where you get all the countries to the table, and you can set your own agendas when it comes to carbon emissions.
So I say, but that's my point. Right.
I think the American people, at least people maybe who are center to the left, would say that's progress. To get China to the table is progress.
So they think
I'm the great negotiator. He keeps saying, but there's no room to negotiate right now.
The president respected the phony accord enough to institute the three-year exit plan.
You know, so we're going to be able to protect some of this. Hopefully, he needs, as you said, that they need to figure out if this is going to be real or not, and if they're going to say it's not real, then let us fight that battle. Climate change is real. It is going on, and we need to do something about it. And the Army, the Pentagon has already said they consider it one of the most important risks that the country is fighting is climate change. We need to have an opportunity to create the answers that are going to solve this problem.
All right, let's talk about Qatar today. This is your wheelhouse, Roebling.
But strikes home.
So let me see if I have this right. There is a coalition of Arab states. They have all come together and said Qatar's got to go.
Well,
we don't like that you've been supporting terrorism in Iran. That's not good for United States.
It's a complication. I mean, the lead on the New York Times article this afternoon, which came after Bloomberg and everybody else, was pretty good. And it's an unnecessary, unwelcome irritant and side issue that you don't want to have when you've just been to the region and invoked the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council, among others. I mean, this unprecedented talk in Riyadh that Trump gave, and then it all breaks down. It turns out, I mean, late afternoon reporting from the FT and then replied to on Zero Hedge indicates that this is all about a $1 billion payment that the emir made to Iran and some terrorist front organizations to ransom and bring home 40 members of his family who were captured in Iran on a falcon hunting trip. in 2015, which is a big story. And
see,
I was,
that's why you don't go falcon hunting.
That's why, certainly not in Iran. Anyway,
you know, I used to go in Barrington a lot.
Look, the fact is that everybody over there has got 2 feet. You made the point in the break that there are seven sides. Kevin said there are seven sides. It's a very complex matter.
How does it affect us?
The U.S. has got to encourage the Gulf Cooperation Council to work this out, and that means pressure a little bit on the Qatar side, pressure a little bit on the other side.
How it affects us is Rex Tillerson needs to have more than two people running the State Department.
I don't disagree.
And we don't have...
Say it.
We don't have the intellectual capabilities in the State Department.
No.
To deal with these challenges. We've gotten rid of all our ambassadors around the world.
No, only the political ones.
But the political ones, that we'll have an argument.
Danielle Smith is in there today.
We will have an argument over political versus
career.
The life
versus
career.
The career.
Career, and I actually, some good, some bad on both sides.
Right.
But we are killing the intellectual firepower in the State Department right now.
Right.
And that needs to stop. And, you know, and Rex, is the Secretary Tillerson, is doing that at the head of it. And he needs to understand that he needs a wider range of people that are understanding and going and learning what needs to be learned so that we can explain this. And then maybe the president will listen to
them. Let me make a transition quick as we're running out of time to the Senate. President Trump saying, hey, you know what? The Senate's been obstructionist. They've stopped me from having appointments. You've heard on the other side, we've heard Dave many a time saying that he's not filling those appointments. There seems to be a little static around the idea of...
Well, I would say both are true. But there's a greater pox on Trump's house for being so slow, and by now he should have caught up, and he hasn't, and that's a big source of concern for people like me who view every day going by while the Congress of the United States is asleep doing basically nothing is a lost opportunity for the revolution people are seeking in the reform of their federal government. And every day goes by, and, you know, Paul Ryan is laying down, you know, 6 feet, 4 inches of him, on some big green congressional leather sofa watching the Nationals game.
No, he's been beat down so far by the Freedom Caucus. He's 5'6" right now. And these things...
He might be on a love seat, not a sofa.
Sofa anymore. You know, two cushions versus three. And so all of a sudden, you know, but we need, you know, these people need to be doing these jobs. And the president needs to step up. Maybe the problem is nobody wants to work for him.
I don't know.
I mean, if I got a call tomorrow, you know, offering me something over a state and, you know, and you know, this is for the future of the country and I'm a patriot, but I'm like, no. I think there's Republicans who love the career in state. They're just not going to get it.
The point is, we've got to fill out it is the responsibility of the elected president to fill out his administration, and Trump's not meeting that responsibility.
Chris Roebling, Kevin Lampe, in for Dave Lundy. We'll be back next Monday night, and we'll talk about Senate. The Senate's back in session. We'll give them a week to ramp up to see where we're at on health care and some other bills.
Chris, excuse me. Chris, oh, they're Kevin. All sleeping on their congressional sofas.
Great to see you guys.
Thanks, man.